Keith, thanks for speaking with us today.
Bill, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Keith, you moved here from New York in 2004. The showcase began in 2006. During those two intervening years, was there anything you were seeing or experiencing that led you to start the show?
Yes. From the minute that I came to town, I was looking for where the original music was. That's something that I did a lot in New York City. And I was part of the Broadway community. I taught at NYU for a while. And writing was very important to me. And I moved out here because I was offered a job as a musical director and a conductor, which was great. And I thought, well, this is fantastic. But then I started looking around for original music, and I realized Vegas is not a place for original music. Vegas is a place for tribute bands and celebrity impersonators and cover bands. I literally was told one time not to waste my time because it was not something that was worth it.
I know that you have visiting composers come and play for the show, but when you first started, did you get the sense there were even enough songwriters and composers in town to fill a show?
No, I didn't know any right at first. I mean, I went the first year and a half. I was still working on my own material. I had some shows that I was writing, and I got them. I spent my time in the studio getting demo recordings and trying to put them together so that I could shop them. It was only, though, because it was called Broadway West. We called the phase that Las Vegas was going through at the time. There were several of us who did what I did, who were musical directors of the different Broadway shows, if you will, that were here in town at the casinos. The Smith Center hadn't opened yet, so the Broadway scene existed in this casino world. It was one of my colleagues who came to me and said, hey, you know, I'm writing some music. I understand you're writing some music, and two other guys we know are doing the same thing. We were all working on pieces that we would like to get produced, maybe take to Broadway or entered into contests and festivals and things like that. He said, why don't we get together one night and just play and sing our material for each other and see how we are, and maybe we can help each other with some feedback and things like that. So that's really how it started. It just, we got together one night at a seedy little dive after our shows late one night, mm-hmm. where there was a bar and there was some food, and it was really, really a fun night. But the fact that it was all original music in that moment, after 2 years of being just starving for it, you know, I hadn't had any of that in my life. And that's what made me become passionate about the idea that we would have something here in town that would promote not just original music, but original music on a certain level and a certain style that Vegas is not known for.
Well, I'm glad you set the scene there for what those first shows were like and where they were held. I wonder if there's a memory you have of maybe in that first year that's kind of representative of what the Composer Showcase was like early on.
The place that my friend found, because he was more in the club scene than I was. I was pretty much in the theater. I'd go home and go to bed. But he had some connections, so he got us this place. It was a seedy little dive kind of place. It was literally a female impersonator brunch bar, and they had a stage, and they had a piano, and they had a microphone and a few lights, and that was it. But that's all we needed. They had a bar and a kitchen, so that was really important to us too. So we went, but in that first year, we would try to schedule it like once a month, and every time we would schedule it, the management would change, and then we would show up, and the door would be locked, and nobody knew we were coming. So somebody would make a phone call, and we'd have to hang out for about 20, 25 minutes. Somebody would show up, turn on the lights, go behind the bar, start, you know, throwing drinks, and there we were. We just, that's how we stayed engaged in the whole process for the first year. It didn't show a lot of promise, but boy, was it fun. And we just said, I mean, it's interesting in that first year too, people like Clint Holmes found us. He was in the process of writing his own autobiographical musical. It was a journalist, Johnny Katsalamitas, brought him or came with him to our first showcase that he came to. He was hooked. I mean, he just wanted to be a part of the whole scene. It wasn't just unknowns. We were part of a community. That's what really was the most important thing to me.
And after that first year, I wonder if there was anything that sticks out in your mind that really started to show the evolution of the Composer Showcase?
We started to get more and more people coming. And then when the people from the Liberace Museum approached me and said, this is a great thing. We could do this over at our little showroom over at the Liberace Museum. And I said, well, do you have a bar and do you have a kitchen? Mm-hmm. He said no, but we worked that out. We catered some things in, and everybody got happy with the whole idea. So when we made that move, it changed the whole tenor, the feel of what we were doing. It turned it into something a little bit more sophisticated, just a little bit. And then the media found out about it. Right after that, all of a sudden, everybody was calling me saying, hey, my son, he can write some music. He wants to be on your show. So, so that's how that all happened. But it was great.
What changes with the show when you move over to the Smith Center?
Oh, so many things. First of all, the stakes are higher. Now, because it's the Smith Center, there's tickets to be bought. And so we're trying to sell enough to break even in the room. And that's difficult because we were part of a community outreach. It was the first month they opened, they had us in. But we had to relearn a bunch of new rules, and it was difficult. Plus, it was like we'd never been in a room that had more than 90 seats. And now all of a sudden it was 250 people. And I thought, oh, how are we ever going to sell this many seats? Well, we did, and it was only a matter of time. And it changed the audience base, too. It wasn't just performers anymore. It was people who were supporters of the arts.
You know, keeping a regular event going for a long time is hard in this fickle and often evolving entertainment market. I'm wondering, what do you credit the longevity of the Composer Showcase to?
We have in this town a remarkable community of arts, artists, of supporters, people who are enthusiastic about the arts, who want to support it. That's one of the things that I found as a member of the Broadway West community at first. We were in the casino world, and what we became very aware of, it was about foot traffic. It was about people coming in from the airports, people who were looking for something to do. This was something else. I mean, when we were up at the Smith Center, or everywhere we'd been, but especially at the Smith Center, it's uptown, right? I mean, well, they call it downtown, but being a New Yorker, it's uptown, okay? So we weren't getting people coming from the airport. We weren't getting that crowd. We were getting the people in our community who were looking for the kind of thing that we did. And we still didn't have a marketing budget or anything like that. We were still a word-of-mouth situation.
Now, speaking of supporting, and you mentioned budgets, you know, this is a nonprofit enterprise, so I'm wondering how you've been able to maintain its funding.
Well, you know, we weren't always a nonprofit. We started just as like a party, like I said. And then somebody came to me, somebody who wanted to donate, and said, you know, if you were a nonprofit, it would be a lot easier for us, my family foundation and people like that, to give you money that we could then use for purposes like scholarships and stuff like that. And I thought, oh my God, what's a nonprofit? I had no idea. But I did the process. Filled out the applications and called the IRS, and I was back and forth with them for about 6 months and finally got the approval. It was like 2015, I think it was, that we finally, maybe even a little bit later than that, we actually got everything sorted. So now, since we did that, it changed everything about our perception, about what we were able to do, about people wanting to help us and by supporting us and giving us. I mean, we're still not in that place like a lot of nonprofits or, you know, millions of dollars. We're not there. And then when the pandemic happened, we saw an opportunity to help our community. The community had held us up for all these years. So all of a sudden, everybody in our community, every artist, every person in every aspect of our business was out of work and like hopelessly out of work. And it was really a scary time. So we set up a little fund, and we started doing small fundraisers that got, you know, bigger and bigger. And we were able to help a lot of people in those couple of years. And we still are. I mean, but the difference is that the need is not as pronounced right now. But there's still people who are still struggling to get back on their feet. Being a nonprofit, I have a board, and we used to get the applications, and we would, you know, get on the phone with each other and just like cry, because we would read the stories about people who were just struggling to feel like all of a sudden the Composer Showcase could be doing something important other than just, you know, putting on a show.
You know, Keith, you had mentioned the cover bands,
mm-hmm.
the tribute acts. Vegas can feel like one big jukebox, and I'm wondering if you tie the success of the showcase in part to its performers and its supporters basically saying, you know, it would just be nice to hear something new.
Yep, that's very true. There are other showcases in town, by the way, that feature songwriters, but it's just done in a different level than what we do because I guess I probably owe that to my years of being a showman, you know, in the theater and all those years. So when I put on a show, I also produce small shows every once in a while. I have a standard by which I want it to be very compelling. I want it to be extremely entertaining. I look for humor. I look for diversity in the acts that we pull together. I'm limited in the amount of time that I have on stage, so I have to be very careful about who and the length of the time that I have on the stage to allow people to come in because we go into overtime, you know, if you're not careful, and that, you know, that's money.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Are there any overarching qualifications for performing during the showcase, besides, of course, having original material?
Well, you know, we have two rules. I always say this, like there's really two. Mm-hmm. One of them is that the music has to be live. We have this agreement with the Musicians Union here in town because we're a showcase, so we're not paying people. We're allowing them the opportunity to come on stage and showcase their work. In doing so, the Musicians Union, of which I'm a very big part, said a long time ago, I said, you got to be careful about this. First of all, you can never do this anywhere where there's gaming, because if there's gaming, they can afford to pay you. Other than that, the only other rule we have is that the composer or somebody in the writing team has to be in the room.
Is there anything unique about your screening process when you're picking who's going to be featured that month?
I don't know if it's unique. I ask people. People reach out to me through our website. I get a lot of solicitations of, you know, and people will send me their songs. And if I like them and or I feel like that they're going to go over well for the audience. And it's a very diverse thing. I mean, I'm not snobby. I'm very open. Original work is, it's most important that it's original, but it helps if it's something that feels like it's good. You know, I don't always go by my own judgment there. I say somebody might like this. We've had everything from like, you know, rap and R&B. We've had classical. We've had jazz, obviously, pop, musical theater, comedy, you know, trunk songs that people just pull out that are funny and interesting. Some of the songwriters that we have come in are chart-topping writers. They have like hits that have been on the big charts. You know, they're Grammy Award winners, they're Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, they're people like that who also have found us, and we now include them in the mix. I don't think that was unavoidable because of we're in Vegas, and it's the entertainment capital of the world. So those same people, and so you got young people from a high school or even a junior high who are writing songs, we'll put them on the stage, and then the next person up is Bill Medley and Bucky Hurd from the Righteous Brothers, you know, and the contrast there is really wonderful because it's a good experience for the young writer, and it's a very fulfilling experience for the writers of note.
Now, you mentioned classical. Does that mean that sometimes songs are performed with no vocals?
Many times. As a matter of fact, our scholarship program through UNLV, we have three different aspects. It's the classical, the jazz, and also the electronic music, which is weird because we say everything has to be live, right? And so we have to dance around some things there. But the classical thing is really the most interesting to me because that's my background. So I like it. Everybody is not their cup of tea, you know, because they'll see something very experimental or a vibraphone solo, you know, like, woohoo. It's some of the best stuff that we present sometimes is whenever somebody will step forward. And there's a teacher there at UNLV now, a woman named Jennifer Beller, who is head of the musical, the composition department. And she's very excited about she's come on the showcase before. She's done some of her own piano pieces and other things that she's written. And then she has students that she recommends for our scholarship. So we're very interactive now with that aspect, that initiative.
Now, Keith, I got to ask, do you ever pull rank and perform your own work during the showcase?
All the time. first of all, I always do the opening number. I'm always writing something new, and if I'm not writing something new, it's because I'm too busy. But I try to keep a fresh opening going on at all times. That's my contribution. For instance, when Sandy Hook happened, it moved me to the point that I had to write about it. And then I found a singer who would sing the song that I wrote. And I was very excited to present that because it moved a lot of people because it moved me so much. So I share my own music a lot.
Besides the stage time and the audience, what do showcase participants get out of this? I guess what I want to ask is, have any of these performances ever led to something like a bigger gig or maybe a recording contract or a noteworthy singer saying, hey, I want to perform this song?
Oh, yeah. In a nutshell, I've put like people who were in the same room together at a showcase, met for the first time, began to collaborate, and then they would take the piece that they were working on would all of a sudden be in the Las Vegas Fringe Festival, and then they would take it to New York to one of the festivals there. Richard Oberacher, who was one of our first writers, he's the musical director for Ka. He's been one of the most prolific writers. He's always presenting songs from a new show that he's have written, and then we video everything as well. So he'll take the videos from there, he'll put them together, shop them, and he has a show that was a Tony Award-winning show on Broadway that had every step along the way started at the Composer's Showcase.
So Keith, the big show is tonight at Smith Center's Reynolds Hall. Like we said, you're usually in Myron's, the Smith Center's smaller room, but give us a teaser here. What's the format of the show going to be? How might it differ than your typical composer showcase?
Well, tonight we're really going to honor the 20 years. We're going to start with a narrative that's going to explain from where we came and then where we're headed as far as the initiatives that we've been able to offer as a nonprofit, and the new things that are happening in the future. So we're taking it from what was to what is now to what it's going to be. We have most of the performers who are going to be performing are either people who we have had many, many times before, going all the way back, 20 years sometimes. We're honoring them. And also we have a few people like, Frankie Moreno is going to be there, some Vegas high-profile people who have been in other showcases many times writing their original music. Clint Holmes has been one of our great champions. Michael Peterson, who is a country writer who had a number one hit in the country charts in the last couple of years. He's had a lot of new hits in Europe, and he's a member of our community now, and he's lovely. What a wonderful writer and what a wonderful human being he is. So it's part of that being community, too. We have a great singer who has been with us many times as well. She was a Grammy Award winner, a Dove Award winner. Used to be a Christian singer. Now she's more into jazz, but her name is Crystal Lewis, and she's one of my favorite singers in the whole world. So I'm so thrilled. People will remember Michael Brennan and Wayne Green, who were two writers who started with us and who have both passed away in the last maybe 4 or 5 years. And we miss them very much. And so I'm going to honor them with a really special tribute in the show.
Who's going to be playing the music?
It's like two showcases in one. It's a two-actor. We never have two acts. The first act is very small, and then we start, and then we get a little bit bigger as we go. And then when we open into act two, there's a 40-piece orchestra. It's going to be epic. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about. It's like when you come to see a composer showcase, you see a lot of production value. But this is like maybe five times what you're used to seeing.
Keith, is there a sentiment that you want to impart to this audience during this big milestone show? And maybe if not, what do you want the audience to walk away with after they're done tonight?
So many times I'll meet people who somebody will say something about the Composer Showcase and they say, well, I've never heard of that. I think to myself, what rock are you living under? Because it's my life, you know? But for sure, it's because we don't spend a lot of time marketing. We don't have that. We're all about sharing, all about community, and all about making sure that we are part of what's going on in the fabric of the entertainment community here. I guess if there's anything at all, I'd like to try to spread the word a little bit more so people know more about it. Because more than anything, I want to get beyond the four walls of Myron's and go further into the world with our outreach. What we're doing is trying to create a platform and a forum for original music, for songwriters. And it's been a very fulfilling thing that if people would come away becoming fans of original music here in Las Vegas, I think we will have done our job.
The Composer Showcase of Las Vegas 20th Anniversary Show is tonight, April 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Smith Center's Reynolds Hall. We'll have a link for more info at kmpr.org. Keith Thompson is, among many things, the founder and host of the Composer Showcase. Keith, thank you.
Thank you.